trade efficiency with NACFI's Mike Roth and Friends.
In episode 17, we speak with Rustam Kocher, charging infrastructure lead for the e-mobility group at Daimler Trucks North America, where we talk about the speed of the transition to electric trucks, DTNA's e-mobility projects, why fleets are looking at EVs, the importance of charging infrastructure and charging management, and his amazing passion for electric vehicles. He also offers advice to fleets about making the move to electric trucks.
Today we have joining me Rustam Kocher. He's charging infrastructure lead for the e-mobility group at Daimler Trucks North America. Hello, Rustam. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Mike. Glad to be here.
You know, we've worked with Daimler for years, but when we started our work on helping guide the future of electric, medium, and heavy trucks, I'm sure that's probably how we got connected. But do you remember?
Yeah, we've been on 5 or 6, maybe more panels together and had a chance to really dig into these topics, and I enjoy it.
Yeah, and what's fun with those is when, you know, there's some planning ahead, you know, and where you can kind of talk about, okay, well, this is best for me to talk about and you, and that's how we, hit it off so quickly, and we were finding a lot of the same things, which we'll get into here about, you know, sort of what's happening in the marketplace with respect to electric trucks. I mean, in many ways, it's coming faster than I thought, and I've been at this for a long time.
Yeah, it's the speed at which the market is going to transition, I think, is going to be head-spinning for a lot of folks.
What is the e-mobility group at Daimler, and how do you fit in it, and so forth?
In this case, Daimler is Daimler Trucks North America, so I'm part of the electric mobility group at Daimler Trucks North America. Our brands are Freightliner, Thomas Built Bus, Freightliner Custom Chassis, and Alliance brand aftermarket parts. But at Daimler Trucks North America, about 3 years ago, we put together what in DTNA parlance we call a swarm, which is a fancy name for a cross-functional team. So 11 of us were brought together to try and solve the issue of electrification and what we could or couldn't do to be competitive in this market. And we've grown from 11 people working diligently on this topic to now well over 150, I think. We have multiple vehicles running in multiple programs, primarily in California. We've got close to 500,000 miles on our vehicles already, learned a tremendous amount, and we've got series production lined up for early 2022. So it's been quick for any industry, but especially for the trucking industry.
Daimler North America is really kind of leading in electric trucks, and in particular in what I would call deployment, right? So there's, I'll let you speak to the numbers, but for some time there's been a number of e-Cascadias and medium duties out hauling real freight. So tell us a little bit about how many, where are they, what are you learning, and sort of what's next, including what I saw in the news is this, and you and I've talked about this, a CX fleet. So walk us through the early deployments.
So when we started, the swarm got together, and we set out what we call our swim lanes. And so it was gain knowledge was one of those swim lanes, and the fleets we have out right now are gain knowledge. So initially was gain headlines, and we built a couple trucks early on just to prove out concept, and we proved it out, and so we jumped straight to the gain knowledge portion of things. So we actually, I could say have, I think if I was being generous, we have four. So we have the innovation fleet, which is 30 trucks with NFI and Penske running in Southern California. Penske's leasing them through to a number of other customers, but that's the one combined with CX fleet where we've got 500,000 miles. With NFI, they're running port routes, port drayage routes back and forth to the port. And, you know, it's given us a tremendous amount of knowledge gain because of the not only just the trucks and the driver interaction with the trucks, but the infrastructure build out, the interaction with the utilities, and everything that came from that. And then we've got the customer experience fleet that we call our CX fleet. And that one is to allow our customers to experience a truck in their fleet in real operations. Now, the trick to that one was infrastructure can be expensive and time-consuming to get installed. And so we had to come up with an innovative way to provide charging for those trucks because it's typically one truck in their fleet and they try it out for a few months and then we send it on to another customer to trial. So we ended up mounting a a charger that would normally be bolted into the ground onto a metal skid that we could move with a forklift that we would essentially plug in like with a large extension cord on a 483 phase Hubble connector. And that's what worked out pretty well. It's not a fast charge. It's supposed to be DC fast charge, but a 40 kW charge on an electric truck is actually fairly slow.
And how many trucks are in that? How many trucks are available in that sort of triad?
In the CX?
Yes.
Yeah. So there's 6 eCascadias and 2 EM2s. Our EM2 is a business class truck, our class 6 or class 7, depending on how it's configured and what rate it's hauling. And then the other two that I would say, well, we've got kind of 4 programs going. We've got Thomas Built Bus, which is also part of the Daimler Trucks North America family. And they've partnered up with Proterra to put an electric drivetrain into our school buses. And we just delivered the first few of our TBB buses to some customers, one of which I'm really excited about, which is with Dominion Utility, where Dominion is actually purchasing the buses and leasing them to local school districts so that they can use them as V2G, vehicle-to-grid capacity, when those buses aren't being driven. School buses actually have a really unique use case that provides a unique opportunity for the utility to use them when the buses aren't being used and can be a really valuable asset for the utility. So we're super eager to find out how that program's going to go and how much they learn. And then the other portion of the DTNA family is Mitsubishi Fuso. We've got some eCanter trucks through the Mitsubishi Fuso arm of our business currently running in North America as well.
Very cool, man. I've got tons of questions for you, but I want to step back a quick bit. I mean, how did you get so passionate about electric trucks? I mean, it just comes right out of you. And I've heard you say that you haven't bought gasoline in, I don't know, 5-6 years. I mean, what drives you, Rustem?
So it's actually 10 years now. It's pretty crazy. But I go so far as if I'm in a rental car, I try and get a hybrid if I can. And typically it's only when I'm traveling paired up with somebody else and I make them buy gas. So I can continue to say that. But, no, I was driving an old 2002 Nissan Altima. And around 2008, 2009, I was looking to replace it because it was getting long in the tooth. And I was like, you know, I'm tired of burning gas and I'm tired of the impact on the environment of burning hydrocarbon-based fuels, and I really should, you know, get an electric. And I looked out. I was like, for sure, somebody's got an electric car out there I can buy. And the only thing I could buy at the time was a three-wheeled tin can, really, from a company called Zap. It was called the Zebra that had, a 25-mile range and a top speed of 40 miles per hour. And I was just aghast that there was nothing out there I could purchase. But what was coming down the line at that time was Nissan's Leaf and the Chevy Volt, and I became super interested in those vehicles and really dug into it, ended up writing my master's thesis on how electric vehicles can be pushed to the masses, and it's really taken off from there. So I've got solar panels on my roof at home, and I've only ever had electric cars for the last 10 years, many of which have been Mercedes B-Class, and I'm proud to say I drive on sunshine.
You know, and so before we move on, I mean, why trucks, not cars? We've got so much work yet to do on cars. I mean, you know, those of us who've been in trucks forever, you know, we love it, but not everyone does. So why for you?
So the impact of carbon emissions and just emissions in general is high in the transportation sector. And there's a significant portion of that transportation sector emissions that come from commercial vehicles. And so if we can take those commercial vehicles and turn them from, you know, let's be generous, 8 miles per gallon to MPGE maybe of 100 or so, I haven't seen the actual figures, you know, it makes a tremendous impact on what we can do. And so, you know, I'm a Portland, Oregon boy. I'm a fifth generation Oregonian, and Daimler Trucks North America is here in my backyard, and so I was proud to join them and help make a difference in this industry.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned total cost of ownership a little earlier, you know, that's really exciting. And what keeps driving me is that these are smart decision makers, and you know, engineer by trade. I just always want to, you know, use the quantity. I'm a quantitative kind of guy, you know. So there's a passion in the electric car business. But, you know, sometimes, you know, it doesn't always mean that it has to pencil out as a TCO, you know, for people. And, You know, on the truck side, we'll see a little bit of that with early adopters, you know, trying to help with passion around the vehicles and maybe buying them before they make total TCO sense. But that's going to be fun to watch this electric truck take over in a real TCO-driven market like trucks.
Well, and it's funny, we're seeing not just a TCO-focused, you know, purchasing decision being made, but for some companies, the aspect of the zero emissions portion of, you know, that transportation of their goods or services is in and itself, you know, it has value. And so it can be factored into their TCO calculation. You know, for a consumer-based company, if they are directly consumer-facing, the consumers place a value on sustainability of the supply chain. And so if they can put that in place, it has a value when they speak to their customer.
Yeah, well said. We talk about hard costs, soft costs, and then softer costs in trying to really drive the industry to, you know, itemize and recognize all those costs in their TCO. And it's, you know, cost is both negative and positive, right? It's both the negative cost and the benefits of electric trucks. So your specific work there is on infrastructure, and you know, with NACFI's work, we also, you know, we see charging infrastructure as kind of the biggest piece here. It takes a long time. You know, you have to do it a couple of times if you do it for the first few trucks, and then maybe to build out a location, you know, with maybe there's 50 or 100 trucks at that location. So, you know, and quite bluntly, as we do our work, we talk to fleets and they're like, okay, I'm ready to go with the truck. And then they see what it takes on the charging side, and they're like, oh my God, I'll just wait till somebody else does this and make it easier. So you guys kind of conclude the same thing. And, you know, what's Daimler North America Trucks doing to help with that whole infrastructure piece?
Well, you know, as the team that I'm a member of is one we call our ecosystem team. And ecosystem is everything that's not the truck. So it includes infrastructure. It also includes interfacing with the utilities. It also includes, in my case, working on, you know, developing a common charging standard for commercial trucks and things like that. So, yes, infrastructure is a significant hurdle to adoption. Can you imagine if you're a fleet and you order 30 electric trucks, but you don't do the infrastructure? Those trucks show up, they can run one route, maybe half a route, and they don't have charging. That, you know, that's not going to work. So, the infrastructure has to be carefully considered. It has to be factored into the TCO conversation, and it has to be built out expressly for the needs of whatever that fleet is doing. And it has to be hand-in-hand partnership with the local electric utility, because they're the ones providing the new fuel. So we're finding all sorts of interesting problems that need to be overcome in this regard. You know, in many cases for a fleet, their fuel is now coming from their facilities manager because they're the ones paying the electricity bill instead of the fleet manager. And so that conversation has to be struck up on the customer side. And yeah, it's a whole system of change that has to take place for those fleet customers to integrate electric vehicles in.
And the utility world is vastly different, right? You've got rural cooperatives, you got public, private, and I know enough to be dangerous, and we're partnered up with Rocky Mountain Institute, and, you know, RMI has done, you know, decades work with utilities, and sometimes, you know, I wonder just how it's just so complex, right? I mean, is there any tricks to that you've seen, or is it just muscling through?
It is just grinding through. There's over 3,000 utilities in the United States, and as you mentioned, there's the co-ops, there's municipal utilities, there's investor-owned utilities. You know, we've got, with our innovation fleet, we've got one customer with five locations that draws power from three different utilities, one of which is a municipal and two of who are independently owned. And we've got, as a result, three different prices of fuel in this case from the electricity, because those utilities have different rates. And not only that, those utilities also have what's called time of use rates, where it depends on when you're pulling that power out of the utility, what that utility or what that cost per kilowatt hour is. So it's a whole different level of complexity, and our team is built to help the customers overcome that, to understand it, to factor it into a charging management program, and consult with them to make sure that it's, number one, it's the right decision, and number two, to help manage that fleet and the charging once they've got the vehicles in hand.
Yeah, you said it quickly, but charging management plan, I think that's going to become a lot more of our lexicon as we move forward, because you can invest in on-site storage, whether that be batteries or maybe some other things. And, you're even talking about school buses and vehicle to grid. Maybe there's some ways to, to take advantage of vehicles in that environment. But just, charging, when you charge, do you want to charge really slowly? Do you want to charge fast? Do you charge it in the middle of the night, during the day? Or, I could see this being the area where fleets will be thinking about changing their operations a bit. If they can, because of that charging cost and so forth. You think that makes sense? You agree with that?
Yes, very much. It really becomes a new tool in the toolbox of a fleet to become even more efficient. Every fleet is striving for to be the most efficient they can, because that's making them money. So it becomes a very powerful and efficient tool for a fleet to really understand what their costs are if they're running electric vehicles, and what the impact of their charging profile looks like, and how that's going to help them be more profitable. So if a fleet can deliver goods, say mid-afternoon between 4 and 10 p.m., which is the more expensive electric time, and then charge after 10 p.m. or after midnight, and have the vehicles be full in the morning, or plug the vehicles in and maybe absorb really inexpensive electricity that's generated by sunlight during what's called the belly of the duck curve in California, then they could even be, in some cases, almost charging for free. So there's a tremendous opportunity for a really smart fleet to really dig into this and understand what the implications of running their fleet at different times and in different ways can impact them, their bottom line.
Right, and some of that just might be, the super fast, I don't know all the right terms, but this super fast charging is not always the answer. I mean, there's in e-commerce, there's a lot of these package delivery trucks that just we don't want in our neighborhoods when the kids are home from school. So they go out and operate for, really kind of short shifts, right? Early morning to mid-afternoon, and then they sit around for long times. Now, this isn't all of them, but there's so much talk about, you got to fuel the truck as fast. You got to charge the truck as fast as you can fuel it with gasoline and diesel. It's not always the case.
There's cases to be made for slow charging. There's cases to be made for medium slow charging. And there's cases to be made for fast charging. And so that's all, again, part and parcel of how you run your fleet and maximize your costs.
Right. So almost completely contrary to my last point, I wanted to ask you about Charin. Because you are taking on a leadership role in a cross-company effort to look at really fast extreme charging, or whatever the right terms is. You can educate me and the people on this listening right now. But tell us about Charin and the future of, really fast charging of trucks.
So almost about 2 years ago, we all got together. When I say all, it was a meeting that Charin had held. It was an annual meeting for North America. And some truck and bus manufacturers were there, and we sat down and talked about what some of the hurdles to overcoming electric commercial vehicles were. And one of which is, if we're going to fast charge a commercial vehicle that has a 600 kilowatt hour battery pack, there's currently no standard out there that allows us to do that in what you would consider to be a fast charge, a 15 or 20 minute cycle, because it's a megawatt. And so we all got together to come up with a new standard, and stupidly I said yes to leading this thing, but we're well on our way to having a final version. And where this becomes valuable is in those scenarios where you have a vehicle that's traveling from point A to point C, and or A to B, and it's longer than the range of the vehicle. So it starts in Los Angeles and it's going to Houston, and current electric vehicles can go 500 or 600 miles, maybe maximum. And if that vehicle is trying to reach that point B, then they're going to have to stop and charge along the way. And no driver is going to want to stop and charge for 2.5-3 hours, which is what they could currently capable of with a CCS. So we need some way to power a lot of electricity into that battery in a short period of time. So we've come up with what we call the megawatt charging system, the MCS. Charon is the group that controls CCS1 and CCS2 globally, and so MCS fits into the CCS family. We've recently conducted some tests on it at the National Renewable Energy Laboratories in Golden, Colorado. We found some very valuable feedback from those tests. In fact, they're literally ongoing right now. Kind of a long tail on some of the temperature testing. And we will make some changes to the design. Actually, we already have. And we'll go back for round two probably early next year. And we'll soon have a standard we can share with the world as to charging commercial vehicles at a megawatt and above. And it's not just going to be trucks. It's going to be airplanes. It's going to be marine. There's a lot of opportunity to convert commercial vehicles in all aspects towards electrification and put power in them fast when needed.
Yeah, very good. I've been accused of saying too often, I guess, that we're going to crawl, walk, and run here with electric trucks. And we got to work on each one of them while we're moving forward. I mean, the crawling applications are going to be a little easier to do, at the beginning. But boy, you got to have your sights on running, and part of this, fast charging, really fits in that category. So, this has been fantastic. We're running out of time. I mean, what's your advice to, the folks out there that are, trying to make a difference with electric trucks, but, have all of the challenges we've been talking about in this time together? What's your advice for them? What might help them to keep the energy up?
So I would say get your hands on one of our trucks as soon as you can. Reach out and find a way to get into our customer experience program if you'd like to try one of the trucks. Infrastructure is going to be really important. Spend a lot of time and planning before you start to touch the ground. Have a very informed utility guy that works with us on our truck and fleet and utility strategy. And his mantra is touch the ground once, because it gets really expensive when you touch it twice. So as you build out your infrastructure, plan for that 110-100 cycle of adoption. So you're going to have a pilot fleet, that's the one. You're going to have a test fleet, that's the 10. And then you're going to have full-fledged adoption, which is the 100. So plan ahead for that. Get your conduit in the ground. Plan ahead for how your yard is going to be impacted, how your utility power is going to come to your site. And then, frankly, the trucks will be fairly easy after that, because you'll already have your power and your charging planned out, and then you'll choose the right vehicle for the right job to haul the right load.
Excellent. Rustin, thank you very much, and thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
Freight Efficiency with NACFI's Mike Rosenfrenz.